And now, let's turn to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local officials, residents, and personalities providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your city of Palmer. Moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, once again, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio Nate Wallace, City Manager of the City of Palmer. Welcome, Nate.
Thanks. Good to be here again.
Fair day, yes. Yet another fair day. Well, we're looking at the last 4 days of the Alaska State Fair, and as best we can project, there will be nothing but sun, a little bit of cloud there today, but no rain, and no rain projected. It's just going to be sun, 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 and that might just have an impact on people's feelings about going to parade.
Oh, I think it can be the last 4 days is going to be huge.
Right.
At least we're hoping. But what a great time to go out. The termination dust is out there.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
If you go to sunshine still. So.
Yeah, if you go to our webcam, you can see, go to Weather Underground and look at our webcam, and it looks right out at the Palmer Depot. And then if you lift your eyes to Matanuska Peak, you will find there is white stuff up there.
It's there.
How many times have you gone to the fair so far this year?
So far, three.
Three, okay. And what did you notice in your visits to the fair this year? Anything that stands out as being an aha moment?
Well, maybe not so much aha, but it seems like every time I've gone this year, it's been raining. So it hasn't been crowded. But what's amazing is how many people are there when it's raining.
Right.
It's incredible. You would think that they would be shut down, but there's still tons of folks
out
and about, and you're not bumping into people like you might on a really crowded day, but it's just, Alaska's a unique place. The weather won't stop you from doing what's fun and what you like to do. So,
and we were there with a pretty close to sold out crowd for Three Dog Night, which was very interesting because there was a slight bit of moisture coming.
Yes.
There was mist. It was kind of mist that would roll across and in and out. And these guys up there who have been, they formed their band 51 years ago, were incredible. And the crowd, I looked around and I said, this is very interesting. This isn't a situation where the people on the stage and the people in the audience are all of an age. But there were younger people and all kinds of people, and it was a wonderful concert. And I think that was an example. And when you looked at it, so even though it was kind of a little bit of rainy, and you were outside standing or sitting in the rain, you enjoyed this concert, and there wasn't any problem.
No.
Yeah, that was cool. Well, let's go back and do a couple things that are kind of questions I had in my own mind. Regarding the Tuesday Palmer City Council meeting, I have to compliment the city clerk. She did a wonderful job. We talked yesterday in another show about the importance of voting, but what she listed there, and it was in the documentation she provided, and it's available, by the way, if you go to the Palmer City webpage, and you can look at the agenda and accompanying materials, and there it was. She had gone through and reminded that for local elections here in the city, a couple of votes, 4 votes, 8 votes, whatever, made the difference between having one person or another elected. And then she went on and expanded the view to the state. And I remember one coin toss in particular where Carl Moses, an incumbent in the Alaska House of Representatives, was in a primary and came up as a tie, and they flipped a coin and he lost the point was, one, sometimes when you look at those things and there have been close races, but when you actually see the numbers and look at that, it's a reminder that, yes, as we come up to the October election here, which has, as it turns out, seats on the Palmer City Council up, it's important to vote.
Yes. I mean, the whole thing about every vote counts is, if even if the election isn't or the vote isn't close, And who's to say if you were the first person counted or the last person counted, they all count. And if you don't show up, then there's nothing. And you don't have a say in how your government works or who's representing you. So yeah, it's incredible when you just sit down and think about the process. If you don't participate and your neighbor doesn't participate, then why do we even have this system? So it was interesting to read the different pieces where one vote
could make the difference.
Could make the huge difference. Yeah.
All right. Well, the other topic, the second topic that I was interested in that had been introduced previously and I was voted on had to do with the sign ordinance.
Yes.
So I didn't read through the entire set of regulations. I think I skimmed through it. But I'm curious about the largest sign here in the city of Palmer.
The tower?
Yes.
It's not a sign.
I'm looking up there, and I'm seeing PALMER. I'm looking right out the window, and looming above the city is this sign.
Yes.
What do you mean it's not a sign?
It's a water tower.
Well, if it didn't have Palmer on it, it might be. But the reason we bring it up, and it's kind of an interesting thing, because you had a few questions at that meeting about the fuzzy areas, the kind of the nuance, the gray areas. Mm-hmm. Of is this a sign or not a sign? And immediately popped into my mind, well, okay, the water tower is a water tower, but it also is a sign.
Yep. It's a non-conforming legal sign.
Okay. Okay.
And they do things like that come up. Our water tower that's on the Glen Highway up by Cedar Hills.
Right.
We wanted to paint Welcome to Palmer on it, but it's so close to the highway that it would have been considered a billboard, and we can't.
That's by state regulation.
By state regulation. So, yeah, this whole sign piece, when you start digging into it, it's not as easy as you said. I think on one of your earlier shows, we try and make it so that we're business-friendly so that folks can advertise their businesses but not clutter the highways so you don't impinge on state rules, but then carrying over into our own city. And you could have signs every 15 feet, and you wouldn't be able to see the storefronts, but we don't want to get to that point, and we don't have to have clutter. But then again, you want to still be able to shout out where you are and make it. Finding that balance is kind of where we were trying to go with the amended ordinance. So a lot of folks seem to think that we were coming up with a whole brand new sign ordinance that we didn't have one. Well, that's part of the confusion maybe of our packets. We include the old or the current ordinance that we're changing because we're just changing a few lines,
right?
So that folks can see in context how that applies to what's already there. So some folks thought we were coming up with a brand new thing, brand new sign ordinance, because we haven't been enforcing sign regulations. And I think we've had that sign ordinance in place since 1992.
Okay.
Now, that date could be wrong. I don't have it in front of me, but we've had a sign ordinance in the city for almost as long as we've had building code. So
you're looking ahead with some of this so that even though there are no signs of a particular kind, they may come along. And I was wondering about the signs. Very often if listeners have been watching any movies set a little bit in the future, one of the things that is often apparent is what are interactive signs. You walk mm-hmm. by and the sign recognizes you walking by and says, "Hi, come on in and buy mm-hmm. whatever." Do we address that in any way? That's the kind of thing that's rolling along in our
yes,
direction.
that was part of the discussion Tuesday night with what we call changeable copy. And changeable copy has been in our regulation, has been non-permitted for quite a while. And
okay.
That was changeable where you have a sign where you take the letters off and you put the new plastic
sure.
letter up.
Right.
But that was old technology. So now we have new technology with the LED that you can walk up with a computer and change the text on the fly. And right. we don't want to see those on the sides of the street either. And the next piece is, you know, if we changeable copy can go to the animated, like you see in movies.
Right.
And some of those signs are you can see them in New York now and Tokyo and just in real live shots, not so much the future, but it's not something that fits in with Palmer currently, and that's what folks have thought. So we had to expand what changeable copy said so that some of those signs are in that area. Or we could just have a special animated sign that describes, okay, you can, how far do we want to go down? You can have a sign that flashes your name, but flashes isn't good because we don't want to see flashing signs really in Palmer either. So you have a sign that displays your name electronically, but you can't have video pictures below it in pixels of any nature of 1920 by 640 or whatever the technology is that makes the graphics look good. We didn't really want to get down to the, you know, okay, here is a technological or technology described sign that you can and can't have. You know, it's just those signs at this point in our lives of Palmer signs is not something that the input has shown that we want. So
I was curious because this second reading and approval of the sign ordinance did not seem to draw a lot of response from the community, particularly I'm thinking of those people who have signs or might be having signs in the future. Was there very much feedback to say, put this thing in a certain direction, or people saying, well, we want more or less control over the signs? It did not seem to be particularly controversial.
No, one, because, again, we didn't change a lot. The one piece that was changed to existing was no rooftop signs. There's really only one rooftop sign. There was a question about another sign in town, whether it was a rooftop sign or not. So that piece was a change, but we haven't had any requests for those. What really generated this was Matt Valley Credit Union. When they were going through the remodel, they had signs on two sides of the building based on the frontage roads and the old ordinance. But the old ordinance didn't really address tall buildings that you could see from all directions. So they wanted to move one sign from one side of the building to another. But by the technical way the code was written, they couldn't do that because there wasn't a road there. Even though you could see the sign from four different roads, you couldn't see it from the actual way you would approach the building. So that's what started let's take a look at how we describe how many signs you can have and where they can be. So that was what kind of generated the first piece. And then as we were looking at it, we realized that we didn't have an intent and purpose. We just have, here's the things you can't do, but not saying why. And those in other places that don't have those have been challenged in court and won. So that was the second piece, putting its intent and purpose on why are we regulating science to begin with?
Very good.
And that was the basis of it. But we did drive the town several times, had this on P&Z to make sure that we weren't condemning signs that are currently in place, or prevent signs if a sign blows down. That's, you know, it's a not legal nonconforming now. If it blows down, then you can't put it back up. And we really don't want to restrict folks that have had signs for 20 years. But there's one sign in town that would be affected and has been in town for a long time. But when I look at it, I don't really look at it as being a rooftop sign because it's supported by an arch that's attached to the roof, but the sign itself is really on the side. So it's, if it does blow down, it'll be
a hybrid.
Yes. So it's just a matter of how they affix it to the building next time. But
okay.
I think it's been on that building for 50 years. I don't see it moving.
There was one other topic that came up that had a lot of discussion, and it emerged from, I think, your report, and that was a park.
Yes. A piece of property for a future park.
A piece of property for a future park. And as someone who was casually looking at the agenda might not have noted that, but being at the meeting, it became obvious that, one, approval was granted to make sure that you had something to do, which was negotiate the purchase of a piece of property. And it's been something that's been around for a while as a discussion. And apparently, as I understand it, there is a fund for acquisition of land, so monies are available in that to do something of this sort, and an intention on the part of the city to encourage having parks in areas where you're going to have further development. What I found interesting about it was, like the signs, when you start looking at what a sign is and all the different ways it could be done. And you look at a park and you say park. And as you pointed out nicely, well, there are all kinds of parks. You have, once you do this, and there's implications when you're buying the property about the particular piece of property that will allow for a variety of things to be done or not. And so it wasn't as simple a matter, but eventually the I think that discussion, which had been going on for a long time, produced a result. Any comments you'd like to make about the whole process of parking the city?
Parking.
In a matter of speaking.
Okay, there's two different issues with parking here.
Oh, and there are two issues.
So,
yeah,
it's so on parks.
With parking.
As opposed to parking.
Right. Okay.
So there's different mechanisms for funding parks. One is just straight from the general fund, and that's basically how we would have to fund any park, because we have a parks improvement fund, which is built up by developers. So when you do build on a lot in Palmer, there's a park fee. So you have, I believe it's $150 per dwelling unit. So if you're building a single residential house on a lot, developing a house, you contribute to this park fund. Park Improvement Fund.
Okay.
If you're building a subdivision, you have another option. You can build a park within that development and not pay the fee, or you can pay a lump sum fee based on the number of lots you're building, or pay the fee as you build or as it's the lots developed. So there's different mechanisms to contribute to this fund or to build a park. Most developers are just contributing to the fund per lot.
And then the city actually has to pay to have the park developed.
And then in that case, the park can be developed. A park can be developed basically or improved anywhere within the city, not just that subdivision. So the fund collects money from all over the city. And then at some point in time, when there's enough money there, and right now there's not that much, I think it's 50,000 or barely at 50,000 that can go towards park improvements or building a park. You would think that would go a long ways, but it doesn't. When you consider land acquisition and then leveling and or improving the lot so that you can put something on it and then putting something on it. And what I've seen is that playgrounds cost in the six figures as opposed to five figures if we want to build something that's rather robust. If all we want to do is put in a picnic table, you know, that's a pretty easy, and then it's just maintaining it. There's different levels of parks, as we discussed the other night. There's the neighborhood park or the pocket park, which is, we've got several of those. Most of our parks are that type of park. There's the one at the end of Cobb Street. There's one, you can see it from the Glen Highway on Silvertip. There's one up on Darren Road, and then Dolphin. And we have community parks, which are amusement park, a bigger park that you would drive to typically instead of walk to in your neighborhood. Right. But this day and age, folks are, you know, I like the swing set on this park, so I'm going to drive there, and I like the slide on that park, so I'm going to drive my kids over there. Or I'm from out of town, and you know that looks like a great place just to stop and take a break. So some of our neighborhood parks have become more like community parks, and then you can potentially call the quad or the green space out by the library a regional park, because people come from all over for events there. There's different type of parks, and then when you decide what type of park you're going to build, what are you going to put in it? And put in a swing set and merry-go-round, or are you going to put in a parkour course for teenagers? You can put a skateboard park. Is it going to be just picnic tables and fire rings, or is it a trailhead access to some other trail system? So there's
lots of things.
There's a matrix to look at. So.
Tell listeners where this particular piece of land is located.
So this piece of property that the council has directed me to pursue is in a new development called Hidden Ranch, and it's phase four of that development. So it backs up against Brittany Estates.
Okay.
So it's in the back of that current development in the cul-de-sac, and it's a larger piece of property. Of the ones that are being developed, most of those lots are about 20,000 square feet. And this one's just over an acre.
Oh.
And it's because of the terrain. It's a good portion of that isn't buildable. And then another portion of it requires significant improvements. It could be a beautiful home lot, but it also lends itself to being a potential, you know, an investment for a park or a green space of some sort. So that was what Councilmember Best has been pursuing or suggesting for the last couple of years, and then Tuesday night to actually pursue the purchase of that piece of property back there.
Okay.
But we don't have a plan, so the folks that live up there, there's plenty of opportunity coming up to input on what type of
and where typically park where typically be. Is that discussion for the plan conducted?
At the Parks and Rec Board is where it starts, and then the final approval is by council. In the past, when we've had these park meetings, we've gone into the actual neighborhoods, find a community place to do that, either a church or a school or something that's close so people can walk to that meeting and provide their input in addition to the other venues we have.
So I have a question that sort of spans two topics. One is the new highway construction, but also extending park from I look across the street and I see the Palmer Depot, and I consider that to be a building in a park area, mm-hmm. kind of. And, of course, we have the extension of that along a little green pointing toward the south. And then, of course, we have the now overgrown railroad bed, and many people thinking, oh, just a little bit further and there would be a park extension that would actually go to the fair, and we could ride or walk or, push a baby carriage and safely go from here to there. What's this? And I know the reason why I involve the highway.
You know, this is a very sensitive topic for some folks.
Yes, it is. And yet I also notice that the trees are growing ever taller in the center of that railroad bed. That there also is being a provision for a bike trail on the east side of the Glen Highway construction. So how's that all playing out?
So the railroad tracks from the fairgrounds to Sutton, the tracks don't all go all the way there anymore. I don't want to say they've been abandoned, but basically
they've fallen into the river.
Yes, so there's certain sections that no longer exist, but the rail still has the right of way, and that goes right through the center of town. So the depot belongs to the city, the dirt belongs to the railroad. The area that a lot of folks call the Friday Fling area, which is a parking lot, belongs to the railroad. All that green space with the rails going through it belongs to the railroad. So we lease a lot of dirt from the railroad. Skateboard park is part of that. The trail system, the Shane Wood trail system, is part of that. So they've allowed us to do things alongside the tracks. And then there's a section of the population that's really still pushing to have the train come back into the city. Mm-hmm. So any movement to remove the rail meets some resistance. Any movement to develop that into anything other than a rail coming into the city, it would stall or kill that effort. AARC's position is still, this is rail land. We're not giving it up.
Okay.
But they have cut the track just after the fairgrounds, after their that commuter little station. So the tracks are cut, and AARC did that. But the rail still remains in place. So there's another group that would like to see the Rails to Trail program instituted in this area. And there's a master plan that shows that to some degree, but most of it's alongside the rail track, not taking the rail out. So,
sure.
So yeah, it could be something different than it is today. But then again, if once the rail's gone, then there's no chance the train comes back in, and that's a whole nother topic on the pros and cons of having having a train come into the center of town.
But there will be a bike trail on the the west side of the Glen Highway reconstruction.
Yes, there's a pathway that's going to be. It's actually, when it's all said and done, it'll go from Kepler Park all the way up to our current bike tunnel that goes under to Auklet.
Okay, but crossing over the highway to get to the fair from that bike trail.
There'll be stoplights.
There'll be stoplights. Yeah. Okay, all right. Well, we have a few minutes left, and I wanted to have you talk a little bit about the construction that's so visible already, that there's a site view changing dramatic with buildings gone, some farmhouses have been there forever, et cetera, and construction and so on. But to this point, it seems that the promises from the DOT that this was not going to be in any way affecting the fare traffic were good promises.
Yes, I think the biggest change to the fare has been all the people that used to park in the right-of-way, the DOT right-of-way.
Yeah.
So all that parking is no longer there. But as far as the free flow of traffic, the construction hasn't impacted that. I mean, the impacts we're seeing is just from the large numbers of folks coming into town.
Got it.
And making their left and right-hand turns into the fare.
Okay. So with that, you have a chance now, the last few moments, to share with listeners anything you would like.
Well, as you mentioned 2 minutes ago, the big yellow monster that's taking out the vetch. So we have a new mower. It's about a year old now, and it was bought specifically to clear up our rights of ways and some of our utility easements. So it's out and about. It's mowing the grass. It's taking down some of the large brush. So if you see it, give it some room. It does. It's safer than the type we've borrowed in the past. It doesn't fling the material like other types of machines. It still does fling stuff, but we haven't seen material shoot 100 and 200 feet away from where we're mowing, which was the case in the past. But it's going along again the rights of ways along the roadways. So if it's mowing something that you've allowed to grow in a right of way that's blocking sight lines and things like that, you can stop the operator and have the discussion, but it's going to have to come down if it's blocking the sight views. Our police department's gone through and identified intersections where some shrubs and hedges are getting to the point where you can't see around them and they're no longer safe.
Right.
So some of those we try and give the owners an opportunity to trim them down themselves, but that machine doesn't have the finesse that you might have with a set of pruners. So
okay.
So bear with us as we come through. If that machine's in your way, give it some room and it'll get on by. But it's all for the good, so we don't have problems in the future.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Nate Wallace, City Manager for the City of Palmer, for coming in again and sharing information that is obtained nowhere else. Have a good day. Enjoy the fair. I'm going there, too.
You've been listening to Inside the City, a weekly chat with local folks providing up-to-date and relevant information about what's happening in your City of Palmer, moderated by Mike Malevsky. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.